Terry bills by the minute, so you know.
That's right.
Okay.
I'll order it for you.
Yeah, go ahead. What's the insignia for in there?
That's just Izon.
Oh, IZ. Okay, yeah. I haven't seen an Izon shirt for a long time. Back.
This one's been around.
Okay. Okay, 6 o'clock, we'll call the meeting to order. And you, the government, are here, both of them. And Supervisor Stark is excused. And Supervisor Carroll is probably running late. I did not hear from him yet. Citizen comments. Any citizen wish to speak? Listen. Whatever you please.
What I have to do is say who I am?
Yeah, please do. State your name and address.
51st Avenue, Kenosha, Wisconsin, 53144. Good evening, and thank you. At a previous REEC meeting earlier this month, I witnessed a committee member who brought his child and let this child sit right next to him for the entire time. I have no objection with this young child being there, but I do have concerns of where the child was sitting. I'm not sure what rules the REEC has, but it seems there should be something in place going forward to make sure that this never happens again. Next thing you know, a spouse, your spouse, your spouse, your spouse could sit right next to you during these committee meetings. I don't think it's proper. I'm gonna bring this matter up next at the next REEC meeting. I think they need to hear it as well. But I definitely wanted to make sure that all of you heard it, and I will be saying it again at the full county board meeting next month. Thank you.
Thank you. Any other citizen comments?
Megan Gunlock, 12121 2nd Avenue, Pleasant Prairie. On that same note, with the terrible behavior, I'm not sure what the REC goal is, because we can't govern racism out of people. That makes zero sense. They're coming up with these issues that aren't dictated by the government, but they want us to fix people. One example by one of the commissioners that he gave was that he's been profiled in his neighborhood. Police were called on him one time out of, well, he said five times, but I don't know how he only had police called once for him to know that he was profiled. And I asked him, what do you think this commission can do if it's your neighbors watching you and they're watching you out a window? How is the county gonna change that person's heart? Yes, racism exists. People suck. But you can't govern it. It doesn't really, I mean, there's nothing. And all they're doing, they spent a year and a half fighting over garbage and numbers and words and accomplished nothing. And now they want to blame it on everyone else and the new commission members. They're actually trying to get a few things done. They want to look at the schools with truancy issues, which is a direct correlation to people being arrested later on because they're going down a bad path. Those are the things that can be looked at, and maybe we can help get things fixed in the school age. I mean, these two young men are great. They're here, they're participating. Not to call you out, but I think you're probably rare in the grand scheme of things. And that's the problem. We can't fix family interaction, individual behaviors. You all don't have that kind of power. Sorry. It just doesn't make any sense. And they want to keep attacking the commission members, to include a few other county supervisors. Yet, they're not doing anything to help. There was a doctor who spoke at the last meeting complaining about the mortality rate of infants and how people don't get medical care. He's a big wig at a medical facility. He's part of the problem then. Fix your own backyard before you start putting it at your feet. It's not your job to fix people's hearts or private businesses. It's, you don't have that kind of power. Yes, you're elected officials, but that's just nuts. So.
Thank you. Any other citizen comments? Any other citizen comments? Any other citizen comments? Citizen comments are closed. Okay. I just wanna make a comment. Last week, we received an email from Shelley Billingsley about the Kenosha County solar analysis. At first, I was not really sure on what it was, so I went out and tried to find out, to ask questions. And basically, what happened is last year, during budget time, there were $50,000 was put in the budget to look at all different kinds of possibilities for alternatives to energy, including roof panels. We did not spend any money because there was a company that pretty much did it, the study for free. And at the end, it came out that it was not really worth the money or the time to do it. But I think it was a very well project, which we agreed. It was put in by the county executive, $50,000. It was approved by the county board, and I believe it was full 100% approval on that. And now, speaking about the resolution that came out last week, it seems like some people are against to have the state to do it for free, which is pretty much the same thing. So I was puzzled on that. The reason why that's happening, I have no clue. But I just wanted to bring it up. That was the reason why we got that email, just to let us know that we asked for it last during budget time. It was approved, and they went on and did it, and they did save us money. So I guess they did a good job on that. I guess that's all I have right now. Any supervisor comments? Supervisor.
Yeah. So I just want to give a update on the Racial Equity Ethnicity Commission. We've had two meetings since the last executive committee meeting, and you know, it's myself and another supervisor on there, and I'll address this when we talk about the ethics ordinance as well. But it was very troubling to have the other supervisor only have one meeting officially, and then before we even had our second meeting, he was posting private information on two other commissioners on social media with asking the community to contact them by email or by their private phone. I don't know what his intent was, but all I know is one of the commissioners where their information was shared privately is a recently retired police officer for the city of Kenosha. I can't imagine that he would want his private information shared at all. Me personally, I thought it was completely inappropriate. I had numerous people outside of the people that are here contact me and thought it was a form of intimidation of two minorities that are on the commission. And it was, just want to highlight that. That was one aspect. The other thing that he did is because he didn't particularly care for one of the agenda items on a special meeting that was called, is that he contacted four other commissioners, encouraging them not to come to that commission meeting, so there would not be a quorum for the meeting, so we could not vote on anything that might come up that evening. I know this, he did not contact me, but I know this directly from one other person that got called, and he confirmed that through their conversation that he called the three others with that intent. Those two things just alone are disheartening in the fact that, one, it was leading up to the appointments of some of these individuals on the commission. It was very combative at times, not only in the social media, but at our county board meeting. It doesn't lay a very good groundwork to have that continue with once they're on the commission, because I believe it will discourage other people from wanting to volunteer and get involved. These are private citizens and not elected officials, and their information is not public. you know, if someone wanted to ask one of them if it was okay to share it privately or in some way, they should have asked for that permission first. Trying to create a situation where you have an appointed county board supervisor on this commission, and then he is trying to get other commissioners not to show up for meetings. That's just not acceptable. For me, I don't think, or for anybody else. He had confirmed by an email that he was not attending that meeting. And then he shows up 10 minutes late and then starts challenging all kinds of things once the meeting started and causing a disruption. The one people that were at that meeting that don't know why two of the commissioners, you can't close the door. One of the two things that no one knows at that commission on why two of the commissioners were upset with him when he was challenging them openly, and I don't know what his intent is, so I'm not going to classify it, but all he was, it became a shouting match. Those two other commissioners already had an issue with this other supervisor because he shared their private information and called them out on social media, and so there was some background to perhaps the temperament of that conversation and the volatility of that conversation that went on between that supervisor and that commissioner. And it was highly inappropriate. At one point, another commissioner looked over at the other supervisor's daughter as she was about to cry, and he said something, and he made a comment that I didn't hear directly, so I'm not gonna quote him. But he made a comment acknowledging the fact that it was over, she's okay. And then they just continued to be combative. It was completely disruptive. It was, I don't know what would be the best word to describe the outcome of that meeting, but if you look at the social media comments or how people commented afterwards, it was less than ideal. It's not a reflection of what this committee would want out of this commission. It's not what the county board would want out of this commission. It's not what the county executive would want reflected out of this commission. Certainly not what the community would hope for that would be reflected out of this commission. So when we get to the area of discussing the ethics, we need to, and I'll make this comment again, but I think we need to include commission and commissioners in every part of our ethics code. Since we appoint, the county executive appoints, we approve commissioners at all levels, and they should be held to the same level of that we are, and as well as employees of the county, because they're certainly a reflection whether those commissioners are supervisors elected or commissioners, citizens that are appointed, which they volunteer for. So we do have another meeting the third Thursday of this month at 6 o'clock. I know there'll be at least one subcommittee meeting prior to that next Wednesday. Our plan on the subcommittee is to have this updated law enforcement that will deal from much more than just the numbers that were given before, but it will create a pattern all the way back to truancy and K-5. And there's a number of reports leading to how that truancy leads to adult making less than ideal choices, which could lead to arrests and other types of things. So in that report, you'll see that pattern. There'll be a few recommendations that go along with that. So we'll be presenting that in September, provided that commission approves the report, and we'll go from there. So that's all I have.
Thank you. Any other supervisor? Any other supervisor comments? Any other supervisor? Seeing none, supervisor comments are closed. Any communication, Joe?
No.
Approval of minutes?
No minutes.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Hardigan. Second by Supervisor Thomas. Any discussion?
You call me stars.
Any discussion? All those in favor?
Aye.
Opposed? I think they say yes.
But you say yes.
Thank you. Number six, resolution recognizing September 10, 2023 as National Assisted Living Week. So Supervisor Decker, you wanna?
This resolution is recognizing National Assisted Living Week, and it's fitting since we do have Willowbrook, which is a assisted living facility, and that's about it.
Okay. Is there a motion?
Yeah, make a motion to pass.
Second.
Okay, motion by Supervisor Thomas, second by Supervisor Nordigan. Any comments? All in favor?
Oh, hold on.
Might I ask a question?
Sorry.
I'm sorry. Chair, we have a number of resolutions that come each month on things that are recognized either by a federal or state government. How do we select which ones we're bringing and why?
It's all what I feel like, what I think is fitting for the county. I mean, there's national whatever, like, you know, National Beer Day, things like that. I'm bringing forward resolutions that I think are fitting for the county, as in we have assisted living facility. In the past, we've had law enforcement ones. I try to pick ones that are fitting for county government.
So the scope is narrowed to those areas that are directly or indirectly impacted by our local government?
It's a personal decision. I mean, it's not required or anything like that, but it's just my personal decision and opinion, and also obviously the other supervisors that co-sponsor it.
And then second question is, was this a historic practice as well, or is
nope.
it a new practice?
This is a new practice. Supervisor Rodriguez at an executive committee meeting a while ago, actually probably when this first started, said that the city of Kenosha does it, and he would like us to do this to recognize especially things that, so we can support our employees and show that we support them, and also nonprofits or things that help county government. So this is a way to recognize all the contributions they make to help the county.
Thank you.
Any other supervisor? I would like to make a suggestion. I don't know if it's possible. Again, it's up to you, you know, if anybody wants to do it. Would it be possible maybe if you know what you're planning on bringing up, to put all of them like on a quarterly basis or a semi-monthly basis, or we put all of them at the same time instead of doing it every month?
I don't have them written.
Okay. Okay, well, that's why I said it. I mean, if you know which one you're going to bring up, I think it would be better.
I do, but I have to write them. So it's not like I'm pulling them from some, you know, it's not like we wrote them last year and I'm just copying and pasting from last year.
No, I understand. But it's just so we would not have it every month, basically. You know, and we would have it all for 6 months or whatever. Okay, any other supervisors? Seeing none, all in favor?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? You're the government?
Aye.
You said it? Okay, that's what I thought. Number seven, resolution recognizing September 2023 as National Preparedness Month.
Obviously, this is about National Preparedness Month to recognize it. I felt it was fitting since we have had severe flooding events, tornadoes in the county, and so just getting people to recognize that they need to be prepared for these issues. That's what this is about.
Okay, any discussion or a motion?
Motion approved.
Second.
Moved by Supervisor Thomas, second by Supervisor Rose. Any discussion? No discussion. We're gonna take a vote, and we start with the union government.
Aye.
Supervisors?
Aye.
Aye.
Opposed? Passes. Number eight, discussion of possible changes to ethics code, chapter 19 and 20, municipal code of Kenosha County. Joe, it's all yours.
Try to keep this conversation ethical, would you?
Yeah. Hey, ladies.
Oh, he went to get some help.
He's really injured.
No, by all means.
Good evening, supervisors. As you may recall, following
a number of, I'll say, higher profile matters that came up over the past couple of years. It was, honestly, at this point, I don't remember if it was my initiative or someone suggesting it or a combination of both, but it was determined to review the county's ethics code to see sort of where we stood and to see whether that code could or did require any revisions. I thought this was appropriate because as far as I was able to tell, the ethics code really hadn't been reviewed since it had been initially adopted in the late 2000s/2010 sort of era. To that end, I reached out to three different law firms/attorneys, all of whom not only have existing relationships with the county, but also have significant experience in dealing with municipal entities, and ultimately selected based on the proposals that I got from them, or the whatever you want to call them, Carlson Crivello. I flipped that, didn't I?
Yeah,
I did.
We're
sorry.
Changing your name anyways.
Crivello Carlson, or the firm currently known as Crivello Carlson. Attorney Sam Hall, some of you may recall, Attorney Hall has not only represented the county on a number of matters, but most recently assisted us with the Bacina situation. He indicated that he and his team would certainly be capable of reviewing the ethics code that we have currently and get back to me with either a suggestion as to whether the whole thing really required a rewrite or whether we were in fairly good shape, consistent with other municipalities, and only sort of limited changes would need to be made. With that in mind, when that process was completed by Attorney Hall, it seemed appropriate to bring it before the Executive Committee first for purposes of discussion. And as I've indicated, probably ad nauseum, what you have before you really is meant to be a starting point, a discussion draft, not necessarily a final proposal. Based on the conversation we have tonight, as well as other input that may come in from members of the board, Attorney Hall and I would then take that, see if there's other work to be done, and I would anticipate that this is a matter that would probably be brought forward initially to the Legislative Committee. That is historically the precedent, in as much as the existing ethics code was handled by the Legislative Committee first, and then obviously came to the board for debate and consideration. So with that as sort of the general background, I'll turn it over to Attorney Hall to provide some table setting information, and then we can go into discussion and questions on the draft you've got before you.
Okay. Thank you all for having me here today. As Attorney Cardamone mentioned, I was tasked with reviewing Chapter 19 and Chapter 20. But I didn't feel constrained to those. I was kind of given a blank canvas to look at both of those to see if they would work, if it was a matter of making changes, or if the county ought to consider scrapping them all together and starting new. So I really did begin this work with a blank canvas. But I think I'd like to set the table a little bit about ethics codes generally. First of all, there is no statewide standard on ethics codes. Communities, counties, local governments really do run the gamut. A number of counties don't even have an ethics code. And so Kenosha County was ahead of the game with that, certainly. And then, you know, the format of the ethics codes are all different. The consistent theme, though, is that ethics codes are really designed to exist in a place that is between policies and procedures and rules that a county may implement, both with county employees, with elected officials, with governing bodies, and then criminal misconduct of public office. Ethics codes don't exist to, you know, punish rule violations, policy violations, but they also don't go so far as, you know, felony criminal misconduct in public office. It's really meant to govern that space that exists in between. And that is a consistent theme that you see statewide, albeit communities have different ways of doing it and different ways of addressing it. One thing that was crystal clear from the very beginning is that the concept of having two different ethics codes, Chapter 19 and Chapter 20, one governing elected officials and then the other governing employees, that is not seen around the rest of the state. I'm not going to say that it doesn't exist anywhere, but I wasn't able to find any other ethics code that had that sort of a structure. Traditionally, what we see is a single ethics code that governs elected officials and employees alike. There isn't a double standard. It's the same rules that apply to everyone. And that makes sense. I mean, if you think of closed sessions, for example, certainly we're concerned with how elected officials handle themselves in closed session and after closed sessions, but the same is true of staff. And so, you know, putting these legal requirements in place, it really does make sense for them to be applied uniformly. So I felt strongly after kind of an initial review that the concept of having two separate codes really wouldn't serve the county well, and that the traditional model is certainly going to a single code that applies universally to all elected officials, not just the county board, that would apply to the sheriff, the county executive, register of deeds, everybody who's elected, but then also all employees, whether it be a frontline hourly employee or department head, it would apply universally. So I certainly came in with the mindset of recommending that the county move in that direction. Beyond that, I felt, frankly, that most of what the county had in place was good. It was consistent with what we see elsewhere. There were some updates that needed to be made in terms of dollar amounts, for example. I think the original version had a very low dollar amount for accepting of gifts or lunches. I think we raised that to $50 in this proposal. But by and large, the conflict of interest, the provisions that were in place in the combined chapters 19 and 20 are consistent with what we see elsewhere. The one item I want to flag that I think certainly warrants disclosure and potentially discussion is the overall model of how to accomplish this. What Kenosha County has always maintained, at least as far as I know, is an ethics code, an ordinance that is in effect that relies on the Corporation Counsel's office for purposes of providing advisory opinions, and then relies on the district attorney's office for purposes of prosecution. If somebody were to violate, we rely on the DA's office to prosecute the county's ordinance. That's widely used. That system, that style is widely used throughout the state. However, there's other communities, other counties even, that do use an ethics board and that would use a politically appointed committee that would have varying roles. And I say this because I think it's something that needs to be flagged for the committee as you're looking at this. That's certainly an option. I see a number of flaws with it. First of all, once you get to the point of, if we isolate all of the ethics codes around the state, they utilize an ethics board, there's no consistency in how that board is used. They have an ethics board. Sometimes they are filled with county supervisors. Sometimes there's no elected officials whatsoever on the board, but instead are appointed by, in some cases, solely the county executive. In some cases, solely the county executive with the board's confirmation vote. It really runs the gamut. So there's no real consistency or growing trend in support of how to even assemble one of these boards. And then the role of the board is also scattershot as well. Sometimes these boards serve a role of being kind of an initial probable cause finder. If there is an ethics complaint, well, then the board will review it and determine if there's probable cause. And if it is, it goes to the DA's office. And if it doesn't, then it just goes away. But I have to tell you, in communities that we've seen this deployed, where there is, a board, particularly a board that's appointed by elected officials, it becomes hyper-political. We then see political prosecutions of things where the ethics board is attempted to be used one direction or another in an effort to try to exploit a perceived ethics violation for political purposes. What happens in that scenario is usually one of two things. Either it becomes hyper-political and everybody and their uncle on both sides is facing ethics complaints and being hauled in front of the ethics board, which isn't a great outcome, or the ethics board just shuts down. It becomes so hyper-political that nobody actually cares what the ethics board has to say about anything, because everybody just knows that, you know, this is just, you know, the latest witch hunt against supervisor so-and-so. And everybody just checks out, including the public and the elected officials, and ethics boards sit and, you know, they don't get quorums at meetings, or people don't, you know, on these boards don't show up. So at the end of the day, what you have in front of you is an initial proposal, and it really is an initial proposal. This is a kind of a logical stopping point to get feedback from the board as to what direction you want to take this in. But the proposal that's in front of you does not include an ethics board. I did not put that in here for the reasons I just explained. Number one, there isn't, you know, a consensus statewide moving in that direction. And second of all, when I have seen it, it just has not worked well, in my view, for the municipalities that have had it. But in full disclosure, it's something that I feel that, you know, I should at least flag for the supervisor's consideration. And that, as I said, though, is not part of this draft. With that, that's kind of the table setting I have. That's how we went about this. We did go into this with a clean slate. We weren't tied to prior ordinances. And again, the biggest and most important issue we felt was to consolidate this into a single ordinance that would apply to everybody, so that there isn't a double standard. But then, you know, by and large, you'll see there's a lot of familiar phrases. There's a lot of familiar provisions in this code because, frankly, they're consistent with what other communities are doing as well. And you're already miles ahead of a good number of counties that don't even have an ethics code. So with that, I'm happy to discuss any specific provisions that anybody has seen, or if there's any questions or any scenarios that anyone would like to discuss and how the code may be applied, I'd be happy to answer.
Okay.
Sure.
Yeah, thank you. I think what we're going to do, though, I believe, is we're going to limit to one question at a time. We'll go around as many times as we need it, so every supervisor has got a chance to ask a question, and then we start over again. Supervisor Rose.
What's wrong with the one we have, which has been in effect and I thought has worked well?
I don't know that anything is wrong per se. The fact that there are two codes, I think, leaves the county susceptible. There are some things, like, for example, with closed session, where the rules restrict elected officials, but they don't really restrict staff. And I think the intention is when the board comes together in a closed session, you all know that that's confidential and that's not to be shared. That's part of the ethics code. But there's staff that sits in closed sessions as well. And so there's a lot of kind of economy of scale to be gained in having one code applied to everyone so that there's nothing missed. But again, besides that, the more of the structure, when I reviewed 19 and 20 and when others in my firm did as well and compared it to others, there was no glaring. There were some updates that were needed, I think, and some tightening of language, but this isn't a wholesale rejection of what is currently in place.
I'm limited to one.
Okay. That's very difficult, I know.
Follow-up question, Your Honor.
Supervisor Nordigan.
I think to Supervisor Thomas's question earlier, what about those who are appointed to boards and commissions? Should we be putting them underneath there? And that lends to the, well, what if an elected person is on a board or a commission and we don't have it, and they go and they do you know, what was done? That's two questions. I'm sorry. I'll wait.
He wasn't in here when I spoke, so.
Yeah. I think that's a very good idea. I think, so you'll see in the ordinance, what we've done is we've really have two groups. We have employees, and then we have Kenosha County elected officials. I think to include citizen members of, you know, boards, commissions, I would probably change that terminology so that it doesn't refer to Kenosha elected officials, but to, I'm not coming up with an idea right now, but we could change that so that within the definition, we also include citizen board members, because that that was an omission on my part. That yeah. is, I think, a very fair point.
I think there's probably collectively maybe 40.
Okay.
The county, right?
Yep. And not every county has. I frankly, the reason, there's no excuse, but the reason I missed it is a lot of counties don't have that citizen involvement. Their committees are formed purely of supervisors. And so if you have community members that are in positions of authority, they ought to be governed by this.
Next supervisor.
So I read through this ordinance closely. I did not read through the last ones to compare. Are there any big changes, removals or additions that you added or took away that you felt was necessary or unnecessary prior or from our previous ordinances?
So it depends how you define big or major. Okay. But but no, I did not find anything that I felt like, well, this entire paragraph needs to be scrapped or needs to be rewritten. A lot of what was done, you know, because I don't live in a cave. I'm aware of some of what has transpired in the past. And so I wanted to take on, you know, for example, you know, how do we address, you know, submitting payroll reports and things like that. And so you'd get to subsection L, which whoever's idea was to add the line item, the line numbers was an excellent idea.
Okay.
Line 212 through 214 or 215. You know, I added, so no elected county official or county employee shall intentionally or recklessly engage in submitting any falsified claim or knowingly false document. It struck me that, you know, that's a very important provision. And the way it is on the code that exists today, it's purely just intentionally.
Mm-hmm.
Proving intent, you know, it's difficult. But you also don't want to set the bar so low that anything gets by. So I added recklessly, because I felt like that does, it certainly would go to the spirit of the code far more. So there was a lot of that type of language. And again, I think, you know, in terms of subsection D, where the value of goods, I think it was lower than
$25.
I think it was $25, and so we, you know, $25, you may not even be able to get a lunch at this point. So we raised that to 50. But you know, nothing. I wouldn't consider that a major change. That's kind of just inflation at this point. So no. To answer your question, no major wholesale changes. It was a lot of just kind of precise points, really for specific purposes where, you know, we're aware that situations have came up. Well, that was already in there. It's in there still.
Okay.
Do you go by to watch it?
That's
it. It's my turn.
Yeah.
Next supervisor.
It's an ethics code, so the arbiter of ethics then becomes our legal counsel currently. Is there a check and balance on legal counsel at some point, or how is that monitored?
Yes, Attorney Cardamone is not king for a day. So this is really intended to be to take the pressure off of that office. And so the way this is designed is that for purposes of soliciting an advisory opinion, Corporations Counsel's office would be the point person on that. But the way that this is designed is that if it's for something that's occurred already, you know, the deed has already been done, so to speak, Corporation Counsel's office has no choice but to seek outside counsel.
So more of a validation that, yes, there's smoke.
Correct. And so that is taken off of Corporation Counsel's hands. And look, if it's a meritless claim, outside counsel will spend, you know, a half an hour on it and report back that there's nothing to this. Or even if all of this is true, it wouldn't give rise to a violation.
But that is, it's intentionally designed to get the Corporation Counsel's Office out of that process, because they also, of course, provide you legal advice, and we want to avoid conflict scenarios. And then, you know, a step further removed is, once outside counsel has done work, if there's a prosecution, it would be in the hands of the district attorney, who also could decline prosecution or move forward with it. There's always prosecutorial discretion in any law.
So I just, not a question, but that starts on line 280, where you discuss if you wanted, if you needed a reference point on there.
And that, by the way, is not, you would be surprised, that's not accepted, you know, across the board in other ethics ordinances. There are some communities that really do look to the Corporation Counsel to, you know, decide these things. And I, as I look at that, I just don't know how that doesn't invite conflicts of interest. And so I think the way this is set up is certainly the way to go.
Yeah, so it's, I guess it's a follow-up question to that. So are there, would there be any other types of violations that would be better suited to be investigated by their peers and have a means in which you could set up a panel to do that instead of, so it could be handled more expeditiously and it could be handled without the expense of outside legal counsel? Are there, and not where they're political, that where it's just ongoing, but, you know, something happens and it doesn't warrant quite this level, but it's something that's against the public interest that goes on some level, and then it's just brought up so we can deal with it, I don't want to say internally, but publicly, but internally amongst that peer group, whatever it might be. Are there any situations or setups like that in the state where there's step-by-step saying if these, whatever it might happen, and then there can be a panel of seven or something like that, right? You know, whatever it might be.
Not that I'm aware of. What we see, you know, so for employees, for the county's employees, well, obviously those steps are in place. I mean, even if it doesn't rise to the level of a ethics code violation, there's still employee investigation and department heads and things like that that are at play to handle that. So I think something short of an ethics code violation that's not going to have to be farmed out is going to be just dealing with it directly with department heads within the county. When it comes to elected officials, it's really difficult, because if you want to actually hold an elected official accountable, elected officials are accountable to their constituencies. And it's, you know, while employees can be disciplined and terminated, you know, I think state law has a provision to allow that to happen with county supervisors, but it is really, really difficult. It's a high burden. And I think that's intentionally so. So once you step into the realm of elected officials, and as you said, to put together a panel of seven, or to, my follow-up question then is, well, to what end? To what is the teeth that would be intended to be imposed against that elected official for not conforming to the rules or to the norms or to the best interest of the community? Because I don't think you can do anything. I don't think you can, you know, even within the county board, sure, if there's 2/3 of a county board and for cause, you can go through the legislative process to remove a board member. You know, you can censure, you can do, like, but there's really no teeth to anything. And then once you get into other branches, then you've got a whole nother problem. I don't know that the county board can really do much of anything to the county executive or to the sheriff or to the register of deeds. So to answer your question, no, I don't see that occurring anywhere else statewide. I think within the county employee population, there's already those types of safeguards in place to allow department heads to do their jobs, to essentially police their departments. And then among elected officials, you know, sky's the limit. We could come up with anything, but to the end, I don't know what you would get as a consequence.
Okay. No, thanks.
Supervisor K. Carol, you have anything now, or do you want to wait?
I do, just thinking through a lot of the processes here, and it almost feels like, you know, there's a lot of verbiage in here, but it's like a flow chart. So, you know, trying to think through a written down version of a flow chart of, okay, if there's a violation and somebody brings it forward, how does that all flow through the gears of the mechanism here and come out with a reasonable outcome? And I, you know, like Supervisor, like Brian had said, I think that
it's okay, don't zolz you.
Forgot for a second, I'm just like, I thought the same thing, and I'm like, well, would there be a remedy of appointing peers or something like that, an independent board? And it's like, well, is that really getting too far into the weeds on this? I mean, is that really an issue? So my thought was, and my question is, what does work well? Is this the version that you've come to conclusion that does work well when you said, hey, an ethics committee doesn't work well?
Yeah, yes. I mean, I think ethics committees or ethics boards, my personal view from seeing this is they end up becoming jokes. They get used for political purposes, and that swings in all different directions depending which way the wind is blowing. And at the end of the day, I think either people become numb to it and they don't care because it's just the next witch hunt, or everybody just completely disengages. I mean, I've seen communities that have an ethics board that haven't been able to get a quorum for a meeting in years, because nobody cares.
Right.
And then you have no ethics code.
Yeah, and my not to piggyback on that, but my recollection is that is essentially what happened with the city when the city instituted an ethics board. It fairly quickly degenerated into, and this is not to disparage the city in any way, shape, or form, but I think it fairly quickly degenerated into a lot of tit for tat and counter claims. And eventually, I believe that's exactly what happened. I think they got to the point where they just never got a quorum because the people who'd been appointed recognized what a challenge this was, and eventually, I don't know what the city replaced it with, but I know that certainly I don't think the commission exists anymore.
And on the flip side, the Village of Twin Lakes has an ethics board, but those folks ask every year, do you need us to do anything other than review the forms that the people fill out every year and turn in, and it's the same thing? So, you know, over 20 years later, they're like, do you really need us? Kind of a question, so.
Guys, have any questions? No? Okay. Supervisor Rose?
I'm no.
Back to you. Nothing?
No.
I believe you were next. Or
Mark, I'm
good.
You're good? Supervisor Bleshaw?
Yes, I did have a note from Supervisor Stock regarding specifically lines, well, 338, 19081, campaign activity, and line 343, furthermore, nothing contained herein shall be construed as prohibiting an elected county official or county employee from making their support known by way of displaying a campaign button or vehicle signage. So I can wear my campaign election shirts to the board floor and campaign openly here by displaying my gear. The question is, that's rather broad. It should be personal time or outside of elected or county responsibilities, should it not? Since Clara's here, Clara wears a great big button that says elect Barbara Bush.
Clara is an employee, she's not an elected official.
Yeah, yes. But this is an ethics code for both.
This would be for both. Yeah.
Shouldn't be in there for employees.
Yeah. So, and I'm sorry, I lost track. Is
343 through 5.
Yes. So, I think that's a fair point. So I would strike then county employee. It would say that
can a county employee wear buttons or openly solicit while they're working? Because that is generally considered campaigning.
Well, this is the reverse. So this says further, nothing contained in here and shall be construed as prohibiting. And I think what we want to say is that there's nothing in here that would prohibit an elected official. from doing those things.
Strike.
But we are not going to say that that's also true for county employees.
Right. Is there a state statute on that issue for government employees?
I think there was at the state level. I think there is, but I also think it's tied to partisan office, which a lot of this, both the state and federal restrictions on campaigning or electioneering, are tied to partisan elections as opposed to nonpartisan. And I assume the intent here would be to restrict it for all, obviously.
Okay. Take it back, review, and come back with.
Yeah. No, so there, and in full disclosure, I intend to sit down with Ms. Tapa a little bit more to go through county employment handbook and rules to make sure that we're using the same language. I think the spirit is in line with everything, but in terms of the actual language that's used, I don't, to the extent that the county's employee manual provides for similar rules, we don't want to be using different terminology here than what is in the employee handbook. We want them in lockstep. So that process has not been done. You know, the kind of the next step would be for us to sit down and identify anywhere in employment policy that similar restrictions exist, and then to make sure that the language meshes.
To follow up on that, does number three contradict the last sentence of number one? Because it's telling you you can't do it, but then number one says that you can do it. And I think I understand why number one says vehicle signage. You could have a bumper sticker on and you don't want someone complaining to their boss that you have a bumper sticker on and they're violating.
It's a private vehicle.
Ethics, exactly. I mean, you can drive to the polling place with a bumper sticker on too.
That's right.
Or having, you know, a yard sign in the back of your car.
I think that. I think subsection one, subsection three, and even subsection five are tied together.
Because one kind of permits campaign buttons. The other one says, nope, nothing.
So I'll rework those, but so that I'm clear, the intent here would be, my understanding of the intent here would be that elected officials can electioneer and campaign as they see fit. For county employees, you're certainly not intending to restrict them having a bumper sticker on their vehicle or
a sign in their yard.
But we draw a line when they're at an event or at a workspace. I would say we draw the line at the workspace.
Right.
Because even if you have a department head that's out at a campaign event and wearing a button, if they take the button on their coat and step in to these offices, that would be a different situation.
But I would say the same thing for elected officials, because I would expect that I'm not allowed to come into a county-paid building or at a county-sponsored event, something paid for with tax dollars, a campaign there, but I can go to a public event and do it.
Or you can come into the building when you're off time. You're not here for a board meeting?
No, because we're off.
No distinction?
No, because
we're technically employees.
Yeah, well.
Well, but you have the First Amendment protections that you all have.
I look to the state legislature. They can't make a political phone call inside the building. They have to step outside the building.
Yeah.
You're talking about elected officials.
Staff as well.
Because of the caucus.
But you're talking about elected officials.
Well, we just stayed based on what you said, because you said that elected officials wouldn't be held to a different. I don't think they should be.
First Amendment protections. I think what you can do is you can create a time and space restriction, right? I think you can say within these four walls, thou shall not do
A, B, and C. I can't pass out campaign flyers on the desks in the chambers or in this meeting. I wouldn't think, even if someone was an elected official here and not on this committee, that I wouldn't think it was proper for them to pass out a campaign material here.
But you could wear a button. Set Aaron Decker for county supervisor?
I would, no, because that's campaigning.
For an elected official?
So I'm concerned you'd face a First Amendment lawsuit by somebody on that. I think you can, I think certainly in terms of electioneering or campaigning or fundraising, I think you can draw a line. When it comes to First Amendment expression, an elected official deciding to wear a button to a county board meeting, I have to go back and do some homework.
Right.
But I my intuition is I would be concerned that you could get a First Amendment lawsuit that would probably go pretty far.
I mean, you're allowed, like I said, you're allowed to bring a car with a bumper sticker on it at the polling place. You're also allowed to wear a t-shirt there as long as you're not standing around.
Correct.
That's electioneering. But if you're there to vote in line, go and on your way, then that's okay too. So
yeah. Let me do some homework on that. I think subsection 1, subsection 3, subsection 5 all kind of tie together to mm-hmm. that point. And then I'll check the state law because that mm-hmm. like this refers to the Hatch Act,
mm-hmm.
but that is only for partisan office.
Mm-hmm.
And so I'll check the state law on that as well, but that's a fair point.
So have in the process of reviewing this or seeing even what they're maybe doing in other parts of the country, has there been anything that's been referenced to social media done by either elected or employees or commissioners? Because you're seeing people from all kinds of different public employment being fired for things that they do on their own time in social media. Is that? I didn't read through probably as carefully as Supervisor Decker, but I did read through it. I did not see any reference to social media or sharing content in some way in here. Did I oversee that or is there
no? I guess I would have to double check, but I didn't specifically include anything with social media. I actually just gave a presentation to all the department heads in Juneau County 2 days ago on social media use. It is a Pandora's box because your employees, your elected officials, all have the right to go home and post and publish on social media whatever they would like.
Well, I'm going to break your rule because I have a follow-up to that then. So,
well, you're knowingly doing it. Wait a minute. I thought knowingly.
Is that an ethics violation?
But I didn't ask it the very first time around. So, but if you go to where is it? 19-24A. I don't know what line that is. It has to do with disclosure of confidential information. Wherever that is.
Mm-hmm. That's on line 76.
Line 76, that's why I blew right by it. Who determines what's confidential information?
Has to be marked.
And what falls under that preview, because then that will assist in determining what could be shared on social media and what could not, and would give guidelines to elected staff, employees, commissioners, people on an assortment of these board agencies, joint services, whatever it might be. I just think going forward, if we want to, maybe, I'm not a big social media person, but I know all the generations behind me, they were raised on a bottle with social media, right? So it's just a way of communications with them, sharing tidbits of information or videos or whatever it might be, and who knows what it will be going forward, right? I just think it needs to be addressed somewhere in here, and that as collectively as a body through the human resources and the county board and the county executive, we need to look at what would be permissible information that can be shared on social media in whatever format that is and what would not be.
So if you go to the very end of the proposed ordinance, the last page, within definitions, subsection 15, so 491, is the definition for privileged information, confidential information, or legally confidential information. And that's where we endeavor to define what confidential information is. So social media isn't specifically called out or identified, but the way that this is written is that if there's any information that falls within the purview of the subsection 15, if it's disseminated verbally, via email, via social media, via handwritten note, whatever the case may be, it would be a violation of this.
Okay. Isn't that part of our policy manual?
No, like disclosing confidential information.
So,
it's not an ethics thing, it's a code of conduct.
For employees.
That's employees only.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So I'll just give you an example. So when we get appointees from the county executive or that come through the county board for an assortment of different citizen commissions or similar, we'll get their applications. And most of their personal data, their street address, their phone number, their email, if that's on there, are all redacted. And then typically the only way you get that information is if you will be appointed to that commission or agency or whatever it might be. Maybe that's a twofold thing that we should have to, and once that information is given, just saying it's private. But for me, that would be, that's a violation. It doesn't, it's not covered in what you just shared, but it's certainly a violation of a trust that their information will still remain private.
So is the, it, in your view, is the violation the fact that you're receiving it in redacted form, or is it that you would disclose after they're appointed?
That someone could disclose it that would be on the commission without consent of
the applicant.
Correct.
Okay. So you're talking about a scenario where there's an applicant to serve on a committee or commission, and those commission members have the unredacted version, which has the
select information off that application.
And then those folks, when somebody doesn't,
and then someone shares it, because we, as a commission, everyone would share each other's emails and phone numbers so you can have meetings and discuss different things, but never the intent would be to share it publicly.
For people who aren't on the commission?
Correct. Okay. And share it on social media.
Okay.
See, I disagree with what you're saying. I understand what your point is, but if you apply for, you want to be on some public board, and where you live, what your phone number is, that's not confidential. If you want a confidential, then don't apply. That's you want to live hermit style life, you can do that, you have that right. But then don't have a phone number, use a PO box, but you start
we're not debating this. We're just talking about
questions. No, but you're making a point here. I think needs to be addressed. We're not going to change now, so. Because now we receive these applications, and we never used to have these things redacted, like somebody's address, their phone number. Personally, I don't care about that. It isn't confidential information. You're creating it to be confidential, but it isn't really.
It's provided in a non-confidential manner.
Yeah, why? Why shouldn't we know where they live? Where some people that we've appointed to committees and commissions don't live in the city. Some live in Racine. Isn't that something the public ought to know? I think so. Maybe you're opposed to them for that very reason, and that's a valid reason to oppose a nominee for a commission. They don't live in Kenosha. They don't have a phone number. How are you going to reach these people? Now, I see what you, I heard what you, before Mr. Hall came in and Mr. Cardamone came in, you were referencing supervisor placing other people's phone numbers on Facebook. Well, it's maybe not fair play. Maybe it's not in good taste. It's nothing illegal about it.
Is it unethical? I think is the question.
Some people might say if you're on these committees or you're elected official, you ought to have your address and phone number there so that people can get a hold of you so that it's not confidential. My phone number's in the phone book. Is that it's not confidential.
Now, I'll give you some preface to this. Since that commission that I referenced specifically, no one's phone numbers or emails are on the website for any member on that commission.
Well, I don't think that's right, to be honest with you.
Well, I'm just letting you know.
Yeah, well, I was not aware of that. Let them do their work, but I think that their phone number should be. I don't see that as confidential. Why should it be? Those people should hear things privately and publicly. They sought to be members of that commission. If I want to contact one of them, how do I do that?
We've deviated from the topic.
Well, you want this covered in this you want this covered in this ethics code. I disagree.
Yeah, the broader question is, has this issue been talked about on the use of social media to disseminate information? I mean, that's the bigger question
So where this comes up, where social media frankly comes up more often than not, is with law enforcement, because there is the ability to restrict what people are saying. The state Supreme Court just accepted a case involving a Milwaukee police officer who made posts online on personal time and then was subject to discipline. In the law enforcement context, there's a reason that the government can police that, and that's because if they say something that can be used against them in a criminal trial, that becomes a Brady disclosure. When it comes to elected officials, when it comes to non-law enforcement employees of a government, it's a really treacherous road if you're going to attempt to legislate people's social media habits offline. Again, in the law enforcement context, the reason that it has historically been upheld is because there's a legitimate law enforcement purpose to say, we don't want officer so-and-so to get grilled on cross-examination. And so if this person is going to be posting these things, they can't be out there making arrests and then having to testify. When it comes to a highway worker who posts on social media, I don't know as a government body if you have the same basis to, you know, step into what is this person posting at home.
Yeah. Okay, so this would be a question, I guess, for both you and Claire. So there would be a select part of our workforce that would fall under some guidelines in that regard. Is that something already that's handled in the sheriff's employee handbook? It's sort of special to them in regarding what they can and cannot post regarding their job duties?
We have a social media policy in our handbook. Yeah.
But I guess, is it referencing more what Attorney Hall is talking about? I mean, because you just said it's a recent case. I just didn't know if that was something that you get, like, updates on or anything like that through emails, or if it's, like, you know.
So historically, I don't mean to speak for Ms. Tapper here, but historically, countywide, there would be a social media policy. But then oftentimes within law enforcement agencies, within their policies, they'll have additional policy provisions that'll say, if you do A, B, and C, you're going to be disciplined. Yeah. So I can't say for certain that that's what we have here, but that would be consistent with what?
I'm fairly certain we have a sheriff's department policy on it, but what exactly it says,
okay. Oh, that's fine. So the other reason I ask is, since it's in the employee handbook, it probably doesn't need to be in this ethics code. Or should it be and there as well? I guess that was my, that's the question.
My sense, so what the ethics code really addresses is the disclosure of this confidential information. How it is disclosed is really not restricted or limited in this ordinance. Okay. So again, whether the person discloses it by a verbal conversation, whether they disclose it via email or social media, or a note that they send off with a pigeon, like, it doesn't matter. If it's been disclosed, it's subject to this.
Okay, fair enough. Okay, thanks.
Anybody else? Supervisor Bessa.
On line 120, may not exceed $50. It was left there. That is not accurate. It is may not exceed $50 in total value annually. I've dealt a lot with Sunshine Act being a medical device, and it gets to be fudgy pretty quick. I mean, 3 18-year Belvinis, and I've already exceeded that. So over the course of a year, it's impossible. It's self-policing or self-monitoring, but is $50 in today's environment?
It was 25.
I don't care what it was. I care, is it responsible to say $50 in today's cost environment?
It may not be. Yeah, I think, and looking at the other ordinances, it's not all that helpful because a lot of them haven't been updated in 15 years either. And so You know, you really could do anything you want here. We could say $50 for any individual up to a maximum of 250 annually, or, you know, we're really working with a clean slate, whatever you all think is
Yeah, Sunshine
reasonable.
Act, I think, has a minimal threshold before reporting kicks in.
Yeah.
It's like $250, and then reporting kicks in.
Yep.
So it does have that leniency to say, look, you're self-policing, but now it became excessive. You got a hotel room, it's $250, you've now exceeded it, must be monitored, tracked, and reported.
Yeah. I think that's reasonable. I mean, I think going to, you know, either doing a two-tiered, you know, saying, you know, one individual amount plus an annual aggregate, or just going to an individual amount and raising it from $50, I mean, I seems fair.
I like the two-tier, honestly, because then you're not, you know, a great weekend or a great golf game at $250 and you're there, but individual occurrence is restricted to a specific or reasonable level, and a cumulative is restricted to a reasonable level, and then doesn't get out of control.
Any other supervisors? Anybody else?
I have a theoretical. So right now we don't have our board commissions appointed people on any of our ethics, right? But what about an elected official who gets appointed? Where do they
do we lie? Carry it with
in
us
the
or
appointed board, which no one else has, but you're an elected official and you do.
Yeah.
I would argue under your current ordinance, you're an elected official, you're an elected,
you're an elected official.
And okay. So if currently if you're sitting on that board, you would be governed by the ethics code and no one else
okay.
on there would.
Fair enough. I just
yeah.
want to get your
but I think that's to the point earlier, I think that's why it's important to include them, because that doesn't make any sense.
Yeah. Okay.
Any other questions? Any other question?
I going with Supervisor Norrigan. But when you're on a board and commission, that are you subject to the $50 thing? Do you want that? That's you know that someone can't give you something of value of $50, because if you're going to include them in some of the things, you're going to include them in everything.
Yeah.
That's an issue.
Yeah.
I mean, I don't think commissioners should be restricted on their, not that they're going to be in the building, but for campaign stuff or anything like that, because they're a private citizen that just happens to be sitting on a board. It's like they happen to get a gift from someone that really doesn't, in my opinion, it's a different level of.
I don't know.
If I took them away to the cabin for a hunting trip for the weekend and.
But you're an elected official, so.
No, but somebody in the community. I don't care who, but took them away on a hunting trip for the weekend, has a net value to the individual, call it $1,500. Hunting trips aren't cheap. And my business was coming before whatever that committee is.
But
that's not a committee.
That's not what this says. This says anyone, not just that it's business before you.
Yeah, but I don't think that would be right at all.
Yeah.
I agree with
oh
that.
Oh, my God.
But
and then they awarded their contract? Like,
But that's
covered by the first part of that
right.
section, which is the anything of value. It doesn't matter the amount.
Right, if someone
given,
comes before you.
Correct.
Given in lieu of.
Yes. Or they could be reasonably
or
viewed as being,
paper.
Yes.
Yeah.
So what you described would be governed by the first part of that paragraph. The second part of the paragraph with the $50 refers to non-monetary gratuities, gifts, lunches, things like that. Like, these provisions were always designed to allow for a simple lunch without an awkward situation.
At $25.
Yeah, that's a very valid point.
The
hunting trip.
So it's what, $20 now?
$25.
I'd say keep it. I don't see boosting that up. I don't like this idea.
Because you eat lunch at
this
the hospital.
Petty, yeah, this petty. To me, it's kind of petty larceny.
Terry?
That's what I see. I don't like it.
Do you charge the same amount per hour now than you did 20 years ago? Or 10 years ago?
That's
I'm
private
saying,
service.
Though,
this is a public
service. I understand,
service,
Terry, but
and
have
you're,
a lunch,
this is somebody
for
seeking
lunch.
Favor from you.
The $25
bucks.
Thing. That's not seeking favor.
10
that's
years
like,
ago,
it might.
$5.
The seeking favor is the other part of the ordinance.
Right.
This is just, I bought someone flowers because they were sick in the hospital and they cost $90. Well, I just violated the ethics ordinance because someone bought me flowers because
right,
I was in the hospital.
Yeah.
They, an employee,
yeah.
another county board supervisor bought me flowers because
okay,
I was in the hospital.
I would agree with that.
That exceeds the $25.
Let me work
well,
with this.
That example that she gave fall within that category.
I think it could. I mean,
right.
the way it's described.
I mean,
I don't think
that should be a violation of anything, but the hunting trip example that was given
sure.
here,
sure.
that's outrageous.
Right.
And the distinction is really
but
important with
exactly.
board and commission
None
members,
of you
because
hunting.
You all as supervisors are, you know, you're always on the clock, and if somebody's taking you to lunch, there's always a perception
right.
that there's
mm-hmm.
some
impropriety.
Agenda to be had.
Yeah.
A citizen board member who's active in the community in other ways, in theory, if they took them out for a $100 dinner because their day job is that they're the director at a hospital or whatever, that has nothing to do with county business, this could, in theory, prohibit that,
mm-hmm.
and that would seem to be wrong.
And then the other situation, too, if you think about it, because it applies to county employees, that applies to all the directors, all the supervisors,
mm-hmm.
all of the employees, you know, when you start to get to that. So if there's, you know, vendors that come in to talk to people about certain things or engineers that, you know, are dealing with, you know, the public works department in a certain way and they have a, you know, a group lunch to discuss stuff, well then it would start to kick in there too.
And that's something, frankly, we already deal with in terms of advising employees.
Yeah. I suggest look at Sunshine Laws.
Yeah.
Sunshine Act, a lot of detail.
Okay. Anybody else? Anybody else? Well, thank you for your presentation.
Thank you.
Okay, next item. Items for future discussion. There's a couple things that we've been talking. If they come true, we'll love it. So there was something. Well, I mean, we're just waiting for some documents or,
yeah.
you know. And our next meeting is the 24th.
The 24th.
September 24th.
October. August.
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 What are we?
Skipping a couple.
It's July.
We're still in July.
July.
Even though it's really hot.
Oh.
It's not August yet.
Okay.
July's the hottest month.
All right. Then let's have it in August. Anything else?
Move to adjourn.
Move to adjourn by Supervisor Royal. Second by Supervisor Thomas. Discussion.
Okay.
In favor.
Aye.
Oppose.
So
we're adjourned.
Okay, 6 o'clock.
Mm-hmm.